Hello, friends. Welcome back to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
You sound very happy to be here.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm always happy to be here.
I'm glad. I like that.
Are you not happy to be here?
No, I'm very happy to be here. It's just you sounded extremely enthusiastic and
the sun is shining.
Good. Life is good. You're happy to be here. I'm happy to be here. All the
What are you reading at the moment? So that's my first question before anything else.
Before anything else, I'm reading a book called Nine Lives by Peter Swanson, who is a very popular writer of thrillers, but I have actually not read any of his thrillers before. But I'm reading this one because it is a sort of riff on And Then There Were None, which I like. I know you're less fond of, but as we discussed in our Agatha Christie episode last year. Yeah, I really like And Then There Were None. And so I'm only about 25, I'm reading it on my Kindle and I'm like 20% of the way through. And it's very intriguing, like a list of like nine people get sent a list of names of which their name is one. And one of the people on the list has just been murdered. And we're trying to figure out like what connects them and why this is happening.
So I like Peter Swanson. I read his first book, which the name of
the Strangers on a Train one.
Yeah, it's Strangers on a Train-esque, and it has a real Gone Girl feeling to it in that I kept changing my mind as to whose side I was on, who I believed, what I thought was happening, which is what I want from a thriller. I want to be constantly kept to my toes. Oh, do you know what? Maybe I did read
that. Yeah, I think I have read that one, and I remember really enjoying it. But yeah, he's had a few now, and I have not kept up with them, but I know that he is well-liked, and yeah, so I'm reading this one at the moment, but I also just started listening on audiobook. So something I have found useful, interesting, I don't know, is to revisit things that, like news events that happened in my lifetime that I don't feel like I was old enough to understand at the time or really like get the full picture on what was going on. Maybe motivated by like, you know, You're Wrong About, the popular podcast.
Yes.
Debunking events or, you know, vibes. And so I'm listening to the audiobook of The Sleep of Reason by David James Smith, which is about the James Bulger murder.
Ah.
And I'm not sort of like actually super interested in that as like a case, but I've heard this book is very interesting. And I've become, over the years, like, increasingly interested in, like, we've become very interested in, like, victims' rights, but I'm also interested in, like, the rights of people who commit crimes and how they're treated by, like, the media. Not in a kind of, like, creating the myth of a serial killer way, but more in terms of, like, human rights and, yeah, how they are perceived and treated in popular culture. And I feel like that was a really good example of a thing where we, like, went incredibly insane. So I am listening to that audiobook at the moment and it's very interesting.
That sounds fascinating.
What are you reading?
I am reading a book forthcoming from 404 Inc. called The Arena of the Unwell by Liam Koehneman.
Top lad.
Now, I absolutely love him. I absolutely loved reading The Appendix, which was one of their inklings from last year. That one was nonfiction. And this is his debut fiction. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's about 20-something dude who, he kind of lacks purpose. He works in a record store. He's massively struggling with his mental health. He's drinking too much. He's underthinking all of his decisions. And he's obsessed with a band called Smiling Politely. And it's kind of about him falling in with an older pair of men, one of whom he initially fancies, the other whom he kind of ends up embroiled with. And it's all quite toxic and dark. And I'm really enjoying it. So that's out later this month.
Nice. We have that to look forward to.
Okay, enough chit-chat. What are we here for?
We're here to discuss the British Book Awards.
Yes! The British Book Awards. The shortlists were announced last month, I think. Yeah, end of March. The finalists are being announced sort of end of May. May 23rd, I think it was. And we thought we'd just have a little nosy through the shortlists and see what we think.
Yeah, because we haven't done a little awards-flavoured ep for a while.
It's been a while, because I feel like they're very difficult to do if you don't immediately see books that you're excited about on the lists.
But, you know, so, we can chat about vibes. We can chat about things we've read, things we want to read, what impressions we get from this list. We can, you
know. Exactly. But that's what I was saying, was that with these shortlists, now there are 12 of them. We're not going to discuss every book on every single shortlist, but with this particular award, there are lots of books here that we love. There are lots of books that we're excited about. So I think we have a lot to say. So
agree.
Let's dive right in.
Where shall we begin?
Let's just start with fiction.
The most general of all the categories.
The most general category. So there's 6 books per category. How many have you read from the fiction?
From fiction,
list?
I've only read 2, and I suspect you have also read those 2. End of list.
Me too. I've read 2. So we've both read. There's Sally Rooney, Beautiful World, Where Are You? And then there's Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. We've, I think, discussed both on the pod.
Yes.
I'm unsurprised to see both of those here, to be honest. I feel like they were so splashy. Obviously, they're from 2 of the biggest selling authors in the UK. So it's unsurprising, but exciting all the same, because, you know, we're big Sally fans and we're big Kazuo fans on this podcast.
Yes, despite having gone on the record and said I didn't love Beautiful World, Where Are You? I'm always happy to see Sally thrive.
Yeah, exactly. It was my least fav, but she still remains dear to my heart. So
agree.
I'm jazzed all the same. Out of the other 4, though, so the other 4, we have Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Doerr. We have Empire of the Sun by Jay Kristoff.
No,
we
have that, it's Empire of the Vampire.
Oh my God, I'm so dumb. Okay. We have Empire of the Vampire by Jay Kristoff. We have Sorrow and Bliss by Meg Mason. And we have The Passenger by Ulrich Alexander Boschwitz.
So
tell me your thoughts.
My thoughts are, would never read Empire of the Vampire by Jay Kristoff. Just not my vibe, not my thing at all. It's edited by my editor, so on those grounds, I'm happy to see it thrive. She's diverse.
According
she
to this,
diverse taste.
Fan demand reportedly broke the Waterstones website twice when this book came out.
That's wild.
Stop it.
Good for him. Well, yeah, it's just not my thing. But apparently the top-selling fantasy title of the year, so clearly lots of people are reading it, but...
The thing is, explain this to me, right? I love vampire movies so much, and yet vampire fiction, anything post, like, 2004, I just haven't liked. I haven't been able to get into it.
Interesting. And, like,
I'm looking at this now and I'm like, I know the major thing that will put me off this book is that it's about 5,000 pages long. It's a big, chunky fantasy novel. And I just think, I'm not going to get through that.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. In general, you know, obviously we read Twilight for the pod last year.
Yeah, we did do that.
But apart from like that and Let the Right One In and The Moth Diaries, I feel like it's not a thing that I like instinctively gravitate towards. So I think it would take a lot for me to feel motivated to read anything that has like a non-human element to it. And this is, it's just not the one for me, but I'm happy that it's selling million billion copies.
What about Cloud Cuckoo Land? So this is from the author of All the Light We Cannot See, and it's exploring climate change, pandemics, and divided communities over 3 separate time frames.
I didn't read All the Light We Cannot See. It did not look like a book I would vibe with, and I have not felt motivated to read it. And so I also, likewise, do not feel motivated to read Cloud Cuckoo Land. I'm not that interested in 3 separate time frames either.
Yeah, All the Light We Cannot See was one of those books that just consistently continued to sell from the moment it came out, I assume to present day, but certainly as a bookseller, we just never stopped selling it. You could keep it on a full price paperback table in like first floor fiction section of Gower Street, so a less well-trod area compared to like front of store. It would just consistently sell. People just consistently wanted to buy that book. But yeah, I also never felt particularly moved to read it. It's probably just a vague bias of chunky historical fiction I'm not super hyped over.
Yeah. It just never struck me as a thing that I particularly wanted to read. Whereas the other two that we have not read, so Sorrow and Bliss by Meg Mason, although I have not read it, it's one of those books that I just keep hearing about. It's like,
yes,
a book that like everyone who reads it recommends it. It's very much a kind of like literary lady book that like if you're a lady in the publishing world, this is a book that you will have read and enjoyed. That's like the vibe I get. It's like the Hamnet of this year.
Yeah, 100%. But it has like the Hamnet of this year, but with like a more millennial, like draped woman vibe, you know? But then also it says on the front, Jesse Burton is calling it jaw-droppingly funny, which surprises me, you know? But I'm excited.
Yeah. I guess the title and the vibes, that's not like the vibe that I got.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, we'll add that one to our TBRs.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I feel like if it was like 99p on the Kindle, I would buy it. But I haven't gone out of my way to buy it or read it.
Not yet. I wait for paperback. I'm a paperback kind of gal. So yes. If it's out in paperback, then I'll pick it up.
Agree. And then The Passenger by Auric Alexander Boschwitz. I had not heard of this, but it's published by Pushkin, who I think are very chic. So good for them.
Yeah, I like Pushkin. I also haven't heard of this one, but that doesn't surprise me because...
It's translation. Again,
well, and also I don't steer myself towards historical fiction very often. So...
Yes. So in the spirit of naming the translator, this book is translated by Philip Bohm, and it is the tale of a Jewish businessman fleeing from the Nazis across Germany in 1938, originally published in German in 2018 and now published by Pushkin in English. And it seems to be selling very well. Apparently Pushkin's first top 10 Sunday Times bestseller in hardback and paperback. And it's just weird. This has not crossed my brain at all. Or if it has, maybe there's just something about the cover that meant that it like rolled off my smooth brain, that I just looked at it and was like, not for me. But now that I'm like hearing about it, I feel more inclined to read it. Like this may motivate me to read it.
I do think it's interesting, though, that these six books are all books that have clearly caused quite a stir, you know?
Yeah.
So beyond just an award for the content, it's also, like, these books have all landed with, like, particularly, like, dashing campaigns. Mm. Like, it was very difficult to miss the Beautiful World, Where Are You campaign. We did a whole fucking episode on it. Clara and the Sun also had an incredible campaign. And then Sorrow and Bliss and Cuckoo Land. So Sorrow and Bliss was a massive word of mouth title. Like, it's all over TikTok. And then, yeah, Empire of the Sun achieved 350%. Empire of the Vampire. Stop it. Empire of the Vampire. I'm not smart enough to talk about Empire of the Vampire. I feel like there's something about it. It rhymes as well. Like, it's such a catchy title. And yet... Anyway, whatever. I'm sick of thinking about it. But yeah, like, so, and then it says here that the Anthony Doerr, Cloud Cuckoo Land, that it was a consumer advertising campaign, an ambitious consumer advertising campaign that reached more than 7 million people. Well, so that's interesting to me.
There was like a poster for it at like the bus stop near my house. So yeah.
Buzzy.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you going to put your money on will win that category?
I think possibly Clara and the Sun. That's the vibe that I'm sensing.
I'm going to put my money on The Passenger. I'm going to go with the most underdog of underdogs.
That's the one I would most like to win, even though I haven't read it, just because we love an underdog story.
We do love an underdog. We love
fiction and translation.
And we love indie presses. It's perfect.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, next up, let's look at the debut fiction shortlist.
I have read marginally more of these than I had of the fiction. So I've read Open Water by Caleb Azuma Nelson. I've read Assembly by Natasha Brown. I've read Luster by Raven Lalani. But I have not read How to Kill Your Family by Bella Mackey. I haven't read Mrs. Death, Mrs. Death by Selena Godden. And I haven't read She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan. How about
that you? That is exactly the same as me.
That's because we are twins.
We are the same person. So let's start with Assembly. I really liked Assembly. So it's a novella. It says here, which I think this is perfect, said to be in conversation with Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalloway and Catherine Mansfield's The Garden Party. So it's about a woman who is on the brink of meeting her partner's family for the first time, and it's like a stream of consciousness as she goes about her day leading up to this garden party. I really liked it. It also says here that it resonated with the public and critics alike, achieving 25 major reviews and closing 2021 as the UK's 10th best-selling debut novel. You know I love data. I love that fact.
That's a great fact. It left me very cold, but it is a classic case of, like, I did not like this book, but I'm really happy that it has popped off. Like, I have no resentment. I have no beef. I'm not going around being like, why do so many people like Assembly by Natasha Brown? It's just, like, I did not personally like it, but I'm really happy. I'm really happy that it's doing so well. And
yeah, I can see why it's a little bit the writing style is quite Marmite-y. And, like, I've never even tried to read Mrs. Dalloway because I don't necessarily always vibe with that kind of experimental fiction, that like stream of consciousness style. But I was grateful to read Assembly. And it's always fun to read something that's pushing boundaries in that way.
Yeah, I agree. And it's very exciting to have like an experimental debut by a young black woman popping off in this way. Like, that's cool. And I love it. And yeah. Happy for her.
Okay, what about How to Kill Your Family?
It looks okay.
Stop it, that noise.
I don't know, I just feel like I can just tell by looking at it that it is not gonna be as like dark as it looks. Do you know what I mean?
So that's the thing. I feel like on paper, it should speak to me. Satirical homicidal novel. Funny, sharp, dark, and twisted JoJo Moyes. But then I just maybe I'm being too quick to write it off. Write it off is probably the wrong word, but I haven't picked it up yet. And I think it's because I fear that it's not going to be as dark as I want my fiction to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just my reading of it, like based on what I know about it, which is, you know, I haven't read it, but I can sense from like the way it's talked about, the kind of language used. So, yeah, I think, like, if someone that I knew, like, if you read it and were like, this is great, it's really dark, you would love it, I would happily read it. But no one that, you know, no one whose taste I am, like, simpatico with has been pushing it on me. So I haven't read it.
Fair. But you have read Luster.
I have. And I loved Luster. So I'm very happy to see it on this list. And it is very deserved because Luster slaps, and we've gone on the record many times to say how funny and sharp and delightful and thought-provoking it is.
Yep, agreed. Loved it. It also really like scratched the permanent itch I have for like multiple things. One is like disillusioned young people struggling to stay afloat in like the current times. And also I love New York novels. So it ticked both of those boxes for me and really delivered. I also loved this book on a line level. I loved the writing style. It's written in this very like almost disconnected voice. Disconnected is kind of the wrong word. Disillusioned voice. You know, which I know isn't not necessarily to everyone's taste, but for me, it's just chef's kiss. Loved it so much. Felt really unique, really fresh.
I have not read Mrs. Death, Mrs. Death by Selena Godden, which I maybe regret. Like, it's a book that it wasn't like I sort of left my house one day with the plan to buy it, but it was one of those books that if it had come my way, like, if I'd been sent a proof or something, maybe I would have read it and enjoyed it. I don't feel like I know a great deal about it, but vibes, it's like the opposite of How to Kill Your Family, whereas, like, the vibes with this I feel are very good. Like, it has a very cool cover, has a cool name. Apparently it is playful experiment with form and voice, and she is a performance and published poet. So I feel like there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. What is your knowledge / read of this book?
So that basically, this is my sorrow and bliss of this round. This is the one that I actively want to read. I just haven't got to it because there are a lot of books, I guess. But hearing like playful experiment with form and voice, I immediately think of some books that I've loved. That makes me think of Max Porter's work. That makes me think of Ellie Williams. Like, it makes me think of these poets that write prose in such a compelling and unique way. that sometimes it can feel quite challenging going in, you know, like that can be a little bit intimidating, but it is so fucking rewarding. So that's going to be added into my next bookshop, I think.
Next up, we have Open Water by Kayla Bazuma Nelson, which I feel
loved this.
Yeah, we've really gone on the record. As with Luster, we've really, you know, chatted about how much we love Open Water, which was one of my top 10 books of last year. And it's delightful. And, you know, you love a New York novel. I love a South London novel. And, you know, happy to see the area that I live in memorialized in such a beautiful book.
Also, I loved this book because I mostly do end up being drawn towards kind of darker stuff. I really enjoyed reading something that was just so full of yearning.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like... Yeah, and it's not like an upbeat book. It's got a lot of pain in it, but God, it's just so beautifully crafted. And it's a super short read, so I was left just hungry for more, which is exactly how I like to feel when I finish a book. I want to finish a book and feel like I'm coming up for air for the first time in ages, and I just want another little deep dive, you know?
I'm going to make a bold claim here, but I feel like we never complain that a book is too short, but we often complain that a book is too long. And we often praise a short book for being short. That's my take.
Agreed.
Make you think.
But then, you know what? I do love a really short book.
Yeah.
I like a book in which I'm finished within 24 hours and left reading.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like when you're not also saying, I also love a really long book. Like, there are some really long books that are amazing, Crimson Petal and the White, for example, but I don't like it. You know, it's not like that is a genre of book that, or like a vibe of book that I am drawn to, whereas I feel like short books, we love a little banger.
Yeah, true, true.
So the last one in this category is She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan, which...
Or as I'm going to be calling it, She Who Became the Vampire.
Yes, because your brain is messed up. It's just... you've lost it. Your brain is turned to cream egg goo. Yeah. Crack open your skull and it is fondant. So
this is the retelling. Retelling of the rise of the Ming Dynasty's founding emperor in a gender-flipped historical fiction. I'm just going to say right now, this isn't the one that I'm going to be drawn towards. Again, historical fiction. And, like, I think I'm leaning on disliking historical fiction as, like, a crutch here a little bit. Because I have read and loved... I used to love, especially Victorian historical fiction.
And we love a bit of Sarah Waters.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I probably need to stop just saying... Eh. But I just, for me to be drawn towards historical fiction, there has to be either a dark, creepy element to it or a really, like, a recommendation from someone whose taste I'm just on point with, you know?
Yeah, agree. And I've got to say, I'm not intrinsically, I'm not someone to whom you say, it's gender flipped, blah, blah, blah. And I go, oh, wow, I've got to read that. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's not a thing. That's, to me, is not a selling point. Like, that's just a thing, you know? And I'm sure there are lots of people for whom it is a big selling point, but I just am not one of those people.
So for you from this round, who's your money on?
My money is on Open Water. Well, instinctively, my money is on Open Water, but I do think maybe because it won the Costa First Novel Award, I wonder if they would be like, we're going to be edgy and choose someone else. I would
say,
I don't know.
No, go on.
What's your take? I was going to say, I feel like maybe they wouldn't go for Luster because it's not British. So I'm thinking it could be Assembly.
So I, as you may or may not know, firmly believe that I'm psychic. And I just feel like it's going to be Mrs. Death.
That would be nice.
That's what my waters are telling me, you know? That's what's in my bones.
Yeah.
Selena.
And also, I've got to say, it is nice that of these six books in the debut category, only one is by a white person.
Yeah, that is cool. That's very cool. Let's boldly go forth and discover the next category, which is the Discover category, supported by Bad Form. So this is the first year that the British Book Awards has included this category, and it's aimed at amplifying books from traditionally underrepresented writers with a particular focus on the work of indie presses and imprints.
So this is interesting because I feel like it's a bit of a like split thing in terms of like it's amplifying books from traditionally unrepresented writers. Fine, that's one thing, which I feel like they've actually done quite well in the other more general categories. But they're also doing a particular focus on the work of indie presses and imprints, whereas I feel like those are two quite distinct things, and I think it's quite strange to like blend them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I also, I'm not, when we're saying focusing on the work of indie presses and imprints, as though that's, as though they're the same thing.
Yeah, because like Bluebird, who published Maybe I Don't Belong Here by David Harewood, that's an imprint of Macmillan.
Yeah, so I'm just like, well, you're not really focusing on indie presses. Just by like... having... Well, let's... Okay, let's go through the list. I also... I feel like a list specifically amplifying books from traditionally underrepresented writers... I will say that I found calling it Discover really odd.
Mm.
I struggled. I had to ask before this was announced. So pre the shortlist announcements, I couldn't actually find a definition of what this prize was for. And just by looking at the books, I couldn't figure it out. Like, there's kids books on here. Like, they cross all different genres. And I just couldn't see anything that they all had in common.
Mm.
And obviously it's because it's the identity of the writers, which in itself is legit. But yeah, I found calling it Discover just a bit strange. Anyway, it is an exciting category though. So have you read, how many of these have you read? I'm guessing just one.
I've only read Detransition Baby.
By Tori Peters. We may or may not have an exciting episode about this book coming up. Who's to say? Not me.
Whoops could possibly say.
Although the little data nerd in me loves the fact that they've listed how many copies have sold.
Mm.
And it sold, I think this is a really interesting insight into like what, how many copies a book can sell for it to be a bestseller and be classed as, you know, like a book of the year. That to the average listener, maybe this number will sound very low. Maybe it will sound really high. I don't know. But Detransition Baby has sold 12,000 copies at the time of writing, which is surprising. I'm surprised at that figure. I thought it would be higher.
Yeah. I guess it hasn't come out. It's only in hardback. Yeah,
no, still. It's paperback.
Oh, has it come out in paperback already?
I'm holding the paperback as we speak in my little paws.
Do you know what? Time has just like messed up my brain.
That is a good point, though. I don't think it's been out in paperback for that long.
I have no idea. But to my brain, it was like only out in hardback. But that's probably because I only have the hardback and I...
But also, yeah, like in reality, 12,000 copies is great. Like that is a fucking big number. It's just wild when you look at the top 10. When you look at the top 10, that when the number one may have sold 100,000 copies, 200,000 copies in a week... It's like, seems like a shocking in contrast, you know, but that's the market for you, baby.
Yep. It's Richard Osman's world. We're just living in it.
Okay. So then we have Keeping the House by, I would have said Tice Sin,
yes.
But that's me just reading it literally. Anyway, so this one was this not, yeah, look, the indie's best-selling title in 2021. So for And Other Stories. Max Porter agreed to edit the book. Love that. And I'm positive that has it been on another shortlist? Has it had another accolade?
Yeah, I think so. I can't tell you which one, but as far as I know, yes, it was also shortlisted for something else. And I am interested in reading this. I think I maybe did look for it in a shop with the intention of buying it and then they didn't have it, which, you know, not every book can, every bookshop can stock every book. And somehow got deterred and then did not end up seeking it elsewhere. But I would definitely read this. It's set in North London, in the Turkish community. It sounds really interesting. And Other Stories, much like Pushkin, very chic. All signs point to yes with this book.
Yeah, I think this sounds wicked. Listen to this. This is a novel brimming with the evocative renderings of gossip mongering and grocery shops, belly dancing lessons, sweated onions and potatoes, and meals that slid oil into you.
Ooh. Yes.
I'm into it. Yeah.
I would definitely read that.
I'm excited about that one. I'm also excited about Keisha the Skat by Jade LB.
Yes, me too.
Were you the right age for Keisha the Skat?
I feel like I was not, but I am very happy that it is popping off again.
So I was definitely way too old, but guess who was the right age to be part of the Keisha the Skat moment?
Is it Emily Hatzar?
Our good friend, glass artist, Emily Hatzar. So she told me all about it. And I have never experienced this before. But she said that, so she bought the hardback, read it. This was a book that was self-published by the author, Jade LB. She was like 13 or 14 when she was writing this. She was posting it online. People were then, like, kids were like copy-pasting it to print it at home.
And like send it around.
Handing it around at school.
Yeah, or like send it through like BlackBerry Messenger.
So Emily said that, like, reading the book, and the book is also they've published two versions. They published the original as it was, and then an edited, polished version, which I think is an interesting choice. But Emily was like, oh, it's really wild that I didn't realize that, you know, I'd missed chapters or I read some bits in the wrong order. So reading it for the first time,
as it was
something
intended,
that she, like, was a really exciting experience. So even though I did not have that experience of the book, I still think it's like a really fucking cool and exciting thing to exist and to now be publishing.
Yeah.
So I will eventually read this.
Do you know who's Jade LB's agent? My agent.
Whomst? No! Oh yeah. My God.
Isn't that
love
so
that.
Cool? I just think Rachel Mann, great taste.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing.
So what else have we got on this list? So we've got Maybe I Don't Belong Here by David Harewood, who is a wonderful actor. And this is a memoir examining the intersection between race and mental health. It's not a book I'm like necessarily drawn to, but I'm sure it's really interesting.
Yeah, I'm not a memoir reader by and large, so it's not one that I would read. But it is the kind of thing that I'm glad to see published, and I hope that it finds its audience.
Yeah, so I listened to this podcast called Family Secrets, and it is what it sounds like. It's like just someone sort of talking about a secret from their family that like shaped or affected their life. And the people who are on the show are generally memoirists. And I never leave any episode thinking I'm going to buy that person's memoir, because I'm like, I've just heard the interesting story. Like, I don't need to read all the rest of it. Just give me the juicy deets, and that's about all I need.
Yeah, and like some people, that is their number one favorite thing to read is memoirs. They love reading the gossipy truth of someone's life and, you know, like hearing someone's kind of anecdotes. It's just not for me. Even someone that I really love, I feel like Patti Smith is probably the only person whose memoirs, you know, every single thing she publishes, I buy immediately.
Mm.
Regardless of quality, I might add. Next on the list, we have A Dream. This is by Maya Rose Craig and illustrated by Sabrina Khadija. And this is
kind of environmentalism.
Exploring the interconnection between environmental and race activism, highlighting 30 people of color who are working to protect the planet.
And this is more aimed at children.
Yeah, this is a kid's book. So I'd say kind of in the great tradition of things like Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, like that kind of leg of kids publishing, which is putting a spotlight on interesting people and just kind of sharing what they've done.
Yeah, whereas this one does sound marginally more interesting because it's like young Indigenous and people of color and it's environmental.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, not for me, but maybe for someone who has children, and this could be like a nice, interesting little gift.
And yeah, on that note as well, the last one on the list, apart from Detransition Baby, is Nen and the Lonely Fisherman by Ian Ingleton, illustrated by James Mayhew from Owlet Press. And this is like an adaptation of The Little Mermaid, but it's a picture book and it's writing directly about LGBTQ+ relationships, which sounds quite nice.
Yeah, and it's nice that both of the children's books that we just mentioned, so We Have a Dream and Nen and the Lonely Fisherman. Nen and the Lonely Fisherman is published by Owlet Press, and We Have a Dream is published by Magic Cat Publishing, both of whom are genuine independent publishers.
Yeah, that's very cool, isn't it?
Nice. So I feel like I'm not in any position to tell you what I think will win from this list because they're all so random. And I have no idea what direction it will go.
Me neither. Even my psychic abilities are letting me down. I feel like it's anyone's. And I wouldn't begrudge seeing any of them win. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's an exciting list. So we'll see what happens with those.
Yeah, I think maybe in future years it would be kind of good to like refine the proposition of what this category is doing.
And then, so there are two more categories that I thought might interest us, but I know that we haven't read any of the books, so we'll just very quickly share. There's the page turner category, which is essentially, hang on, I'm just going to click through. So the page turner is celebrating the best-selling books across all genres and formats. So every genre, the only things that they have to have: eye-catching design, innovative marketing, and significant sales. So significant sales is going to be like in the hundreds of thousands, I assume. But yeah, I've only read from this list, I've only read The Last House on the Street by Catriona Ward, which I absolutely love.
I've read none of them, unfortunately.
You haven't read a single one? Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Like, we're not Sophie Kinsella readers. God love us. But yeah, that's an interesting category. Yeah, it's one of those categories where I feel like, because I do read a lot of mainstream fiction, I wouldn't be surprised to see something like The Last House on the Street on there. But also, I'm not surprised that I haven't read any of the others. And then the other category that I feel like should be, we should gravitate towards, is the crime and thriller category.
Yeah.
But I haven't read a single one of them. I haven't read any of them.
I've read Girl A, which I thought was fine. It hasn't sort of changed my life. And I've read many other thrillers that I have enjoyed more. So it's been quite interesting to try and figure out why this has captured the imagination the way it has. Yeah, and I haven't read The Man Who Died Twice, even though I listened to the audiobook of the first Thursday Murder Club series. I like Val McDermid.
Did you enjoy it?
Did I enjoy Thursday Murder Club? I thought it was okay. I quite enjoyed it. It was fine. Yeah, okay. I enjoyed reading. I liked the experience of reading it. Like, he is a good writer, but the plot, I just don't remember being that excited by.
Fair.
So execution, good. Concept, not great, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Which is the opposite from the experience that I have with a lot of thrillers.
Yeah. It's not for me. I know that they're not for me.
I haven't felt super motivated to read the new Paula Hawkins, A Slow Fire Burning. Maybe. I just feel like I have no idea what it's about. I haven't had anyone talk to me about it. I don't know. What do you know about it?
I know absolutely nothing. I know nothing. Obviously, we read The Girl on the Train. Really enjoyed it. But it was such an event, you know, like, we've talked about this before, but I guess it's been a few years, so I'll say it again. Girl on the Train completely changed the way that, like, the crime thriller publishing landscape. There was a $12.99 hardback, and it remained in hardback for something like 15 or 16 months. I remember as a bookseller waiting for the paperback, and it just seemed like it would never come because the hardback was just consistently selling. And, you know, a lot of places were just selling it at half price. You could get it for £6 in the supermarket. Waterstones just kept it at $9.99. So it was like an affordable hardback that would just completely blew everyone's minds by how well it was selling for how long it maintained that momentum. And then, so I feel like it could never really live up to that kind of hype. But, you know, it also kicked off like that, the golden age of thrillers. There was that period in like the mid 20 teens where there were just so many amazing authors were being published for the first time.
Yeah.
And yeah, Paula Hawkins was definitely one of them. I haven't read anything else since though by her. So we'll see. Maybe this will be the one. Maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I just find it weird that like, I always find it very interesting when there's someone who has like a massive hit, then takes a while to write something else, and then I don't hear a word about the something else. You know, we've seen it happen before, not necessarily with thrillers, but just in general. And yeah, I couldn't tell you a thing about this book. I don't know anything. You know, I really don't know anything about the plot, the vibe, don't know. Yeah.
Also,
know
even the blurb that the bookseller's given us is all about the campaign. There's nothing about the actual book here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Val McDermid.
Yeah, I've read,
tell me everything you know.
Read Val McDermid books and liked it, but haven't. She's not someone who I'm going to read like everything. And
yeah,
I don't love sort of, with the exception of my beloved Attica Locke and the two series that she is writing, one about a lawyer and one about a carp. I'm not like that drawn to like series about one kind of policeman or one journalist or one thing. And it says the first Ali Burns thriller. And I'm just like, nah, not for me.
Yeah, same. Although I love the way that, because you said cop in American accent, it sounded like carp.
Carp. My favorite fish.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, same. I just, no matter how good the writer is, it's very rare for me to read something from a police perspective and enjoy it. One of the exceptions being someone whose books we keep meaning to read for the bestseller series and we just haven't got around to it. Thomas Harris.
Yeah.
Riddle me that. Why is Clarice Starling the one for me? But probably something to do with Jodie Foster.
And then we've got The Appeal by Janice Hallett, which, you know, from the cover, I'm like, absolutely not. Like, you know, I'm not drawn to this in any way, but it does sound kind of interesting.
People love this book. People love it. Like, the first print run sold out within days. Yeah. And it was the retailer. It was Waterstone's best-selling debut of 2021. That's wild.
Because there's another... She's had another published since then called The Twyford Code, which also sounds quite interesting. So,
ah, okay.
Even though the way it's packaged does not speak to me, I feel like I've only heard good things about it, so could definitely be tempted.
Yeah. Maybe. I feel like if you read it and loved it, then I would go in confidently.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So it's just, we're like penguins waiting to see who jumps first into the water. And then Ian Rankin. Never read a single Ian Rankin book. Probably never will.
Yeah.
But
this sounds interesting because it's like a continuation of a book by an author who has died.
Yeah.
That's quite an interesting little thing to do.
See, for that second then, I suddenly leant forward and was scanning that blurb. Like, wait, is Ian Rankin dead? I'm just like, I wish him well. I was like, but no. Ian Rankin, alive
very
and
much
well.
Alive. But William McIlvenny, dead. And Ian Rankin is, like, continuing his...
I don't mean to laugh, but the way you said...
I did say that in a dumb way. That. I'm sorry. William McIlvenny shook...
God. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah. So I feel like that's quite an interesting little thing to do. It doesn't necessarily inspire me to read it, but yeah, nice idea.
Also, the bottom half of the cover. So the cover is like a man standing on a bridge looking out at a cloudy sky. But the bottom half with the, and then it's got like a kind of a cracked glass effect as though we're looking out through a broken windshield. But the bottom half, that cracked glass effect on the black with the neon green, it gives me Gillian Flynn vibes.
True.
Yeah, just FYI. So yeah, those are the lists that we kind of feel qualified to speak on, even though, you know, we haven't read every book. There is also a narrative nonfiction category, a nonfiction lifestyle category, children's nonfiction, children's illustrated, audiobook fiction, and audiobook nonfiction. So there's 12 categories in total. And the winners are being announced on May 23rd, which I'm excited about. I want to know if my psychic abilities are on point or not.
Are alive and well. Well, I'm hyped to find out. And I've enjoyed this little chat with you. Making wild conjecture about things we haven't read. Our favourite kind of episode.
That's my dream. I'm going to go now. I'm going to finish reading The Arena of the Unwell. And then I'm going to read an article about the 50 Shades, like when 50 Shades dropped, like what that was like, that just was posted on Twitter today.
Cool. I will read that. And then maybe we'll
send
talk
it
about
to
it.
You.
Yeah, please.
I'm excited. Okay.
Well,
goodbye.
I'll see you next time. Bye.